Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Friday, February 13th. Friday the 13th.
Wow.
What a day. First item on the schedule is a hearing on House Bill 2295. Mr. Taylor, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2295 comes to you at the request of the Oregon State Council for Interstate Compact for Adult Offender Supervision. It requires counties in partnership with the Department of Corrections to supervise persons convicted of misdemeanor and on probation who request to leave Oregon or are moving to Oregon from another state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill is a result of the Interstate Adult Offender Compact that we are a member of, as are the other 49 states and a few others, including the District of Columbia, are the compact administration. The board a couple of years ago made a decision by one vote that misdemeanor offenders would be supervised. Oregon does not supervise all misdemeanor offenders. What this has done is required Oregon to supervise out-of-state misdemeanor offenders. Now, the rules of the compact supersede state law, except in those places where we have specifically said our Constitution supersedes the compact that we joined. What this means is if we don't do it, we're subject to fines. I don't know where the process stands as it relates to that, but that is something that could eventually happen. You'll notice this also carries a $1.7 million fiscal, Mr. Chair.
Right, thank you. And would you explain to the committee the restrictions placed upon people from Department of Corrections?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, because this bill has a fiscal impact, I don't believe that agencies will come forward to testify on behalf of the bill because it's not in the governor's budget.
When was this agreement made, and is it for a certain length of time? Could the state back out?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Grieger, Ms. Grieger, we entered into this agreement in 2003. At that time, it was at the start of the new agreement. There was one that revoked and superseded. It would take a statutory enactment for us to withdraw from the compact. That may very well have consequences that are greater than the issue here, because now the state, if they wanted to supervise people on parole, not just probation, parole coming into the state of Oregon or leaving the state of Oregon, you would have to have a separate contract with the state where they were going.
We're not intending to work this today because of the issues involved. We'll have somebody else take a look at this and see if it can.
One other little question is,
please.
It talks about requires counties in partnership with, I don't know if that means counties are going to because I know none of the counties are going to be wanting to take on any further financial burden that isn't reimbursed through the state if it includes incarceration or whatever it might be. In other words, the supervision through probation, parole and probation. If this is new people, I don't know where they're going to get the money to do it.
Well, and again, these are misdemeanors who we don't normally be supervising, so
Well,
that's the issue. So we'll see if that can't be resolved. The fact that if you don't do it now, you wouldn't have to do it additionally. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was appointed to the board that oversees this, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to attend many of the meetings as of late. Are you a member of that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I guess I am. Yes, it's an advisory board.
An advisory board, right. Because it might be helpful to have somebody. The governor's office is very involved in this, as are the various agencies, and if we bring this bill back, to have them come back and systematically walk us through all that, somebody who's...
I hope we have an answer, a solution to the problem. Okay.
Maybe. Is there a reason why DOC didn't want to come talk about this? Or
they're not supposed to testify on bills that have a fiscal unless they're asked. And so we could ask them, but I'd rather see if we can't resolve it without putting them under any undue...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The issue seems to be the compact, and we don't have more information on the compact of how we could ask for waivers or something to the compact.
Let's see if we get that information before, and we'll just have another hearing when we get that. Yes,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's one possibility would be for our compact representative to go back to the board and maybe in addition to other states that are similarly situated and ask for a waiver or a postponement. I don't know the process and procedure as it relates to when their next meeting is and everything like that, but it does present a dilemma for the state.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Briefly, Mr. Taylor, just so I'm really clear on what the changes, the substantive changes are with the Dash 1 amendments.
There's Dash 1 amendments?
Am I in the wrong?
Different
yes.
Bill.
Oh, thank you. God. It was clipped to the I'm going, what the heck? Okay, thank you.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 20.
They want to have the witness testify. We do have
Oh, we do have a witness.
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Witness, you're a second ago. Did I steal it?
Thank you.
Oh, here, maybe this is it. Here, I got it right here.
Copy.
Ms. Newman, if you want to testify, please.
It's okay. We have it.
Stuck to this.
Thank you. Chair Barker and members of the House Judiciary Committee, my name is Gail Newman, and I am the director of Benton County Community Corrections. I also sit on the State Advisory Compact Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'm here on behalf of Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors in support of House Bill 2295, which provides funding for misdemeanor interstate compact cases. And as you know, those are mandated to be supervised under the terms of interstate compact. The Interstate Compact is a legally binding agreement among states which requires supervision services for parole, post-prison supervision, probation, and certain bench probation cases which meet Interstate Compact eligibility requirements. In addition to felony cases, this agreement, as noted, mandates that all Interstate Compact eligible misdemeanors be supervised. The legal requirement creates an unfunded mandate for the supervision and transfer of interstate compact misdemeanors. Failure to supervise interstate compact eligible cases places the state as well as the county community corrections agencies in jeopardy of being fined for violating the rules of interstate compact. I've provided a list of the qualifying misdemeanors, and that is on page 2 of the packet. As you can see, it is predominantly person-to-person misdemeanors, a great deal of them, including, for instance, assault force, stalking, strangulation, any number of attempted felony offenses, as well as second-time DUIIs, and, of course, all subsequent DUIIs, and also a number of sexual offenses. I've also provided the Interstate Compact dispute resolution findings from 2006, which did, in fact, add misdemeanor court probations to the compact requirements. The finding that misdemeanor court probations were also under the jurisdiction of compact also increases the workload. And just to clarify, this isn't something that's going to be happening. We have counties and probably every county in the state now already supervising misdemeanor compact cases. And we are abiding by the rules of compact. We're just not being funded for those cases. So House Bill 2295 provides funding for the mandated supervision of interstate compact eligible misdemeanors. And by approving this House bill, then all interstate compact eligible cases will be funded.
And where is that funding coming from? We're funding it. We would be funding it on a general fund?
Actually, I don't know where the funding would...
Is that thin air?
That was kind of the question. You know, that's what we're struggling with is the additional cost. Could you tell us anything more about the compact? What would happen if we were to say we're not going to do it, although you're telling us we're already doing it?
Chair Barker and the committee, yes, we are already involved in the Interstate Compact Agreement. My understanding is that legally, I can't tell you what the ramifications would be, but from a community safety standpoint, it's critical that we return individuals from another state who may have been convicted of a crime here. For instance, I reside and oversee a community that's a college town, and we may have individuals who come to our community, for instance, from another state who commit a crime and may be dismissed from the university. Not participate in compact would then require us to mandate that person to remain in our community for the duration of their supervision.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gail, we have a fiscal report here that gives, it appears that it'd be about $1.7 million. Does that sound like that's ballpark?
Chair, members of the committee, that's the information I've been given, although I've not seen the specific fiscal report.
Okay, thank you.
So just as to make sure I understand, this is not something, a bill that the advisory board has endorsed. It's something the community correction directors are bringing forward as being important to their budgets. Is that correct?
Chair Barker and committee, I'm not in a position to state whether or not the council is supportive. I can tell you that I'm a member of that council, and I do support this process. Also, Sheriff Diana Simpson, who's a member of the council, supports this bill, as do the community corrections directors statewide.
Okay.
Representative Stigler.
Yeah. Ms. Newman, just to be really clear, how long? Well, the decision, the dispute resolution decision that resulted in this level of supervision, is the one that you have attached here, the 2006 decision.
That is correct.
And so then, since that period of time, community corrections departments have been supervising interstate compact misdemeanants.
Yes.
Okay. Is the process follow up? Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
Is the process for bringing a misdemeanant for the interstate compact to come into effect with respect to a misdemeanant different than it is for felony offenders?
Chair Barker and the committee, no, it's essentially the same process, whether it's a misdemeanant supervised probation or even a bench probation, which is now captured under compact.
Okay. So essentially what the organizations, what the counties and such and the community corrections departments are asking is that there be some modicum of reimbursement for the expenses that are currently being incurred pursuant to compliance with this decision.
That's correct.
Thank you very much. And the money's going to be the issue. And I'm not going to work this today. We'll have another look at it and see if we can come up with an answer for that.
Thank you
very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 2295 and open a work session on House Bill 2315. Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, you have before you House Bill 2315 that comes to you at the request of the DPSST, if I remember correctly. I think the label of the bill is wrong, but you have the dash one amendments in front of you. Exempts from disclosure unless the public interest requires otherwise the records of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training relating to an ongoing investigation of fitness of a public safety official. You have the dash one amendments in front of you, what they basically do, going over to basically page 9 of the bill, and others, you see the amendments. It adds a provision relating to a report. You may remember a discussion at our last meeting with Mr. Gallagher and the DPSST. Primarily that there will be a report given at the end of an investigation, and also a notice given. The department shall issue a report when the investigation is complete. That appears a couple of times. The department, well, the department completes an investigation. This is in pages 5 relating to a person's qualification for employment, training, or certification under this section. The department shall issue a report. And there's an emergency clause on Amendment 2.
Okay, the question of the committee, and this, if you recall, was to allow DPSST to conduct an investigation without without early or before the case is concluded, so those, that information doesn't become public and result in possible embarrassment and so on to an innocent party, and allows the investigation to continue. But when it is completed, then the information becomes public. Yes.
And my understanding is these are the amendments that emanated from the work group discussions or the informal work group discussions.
Okay. Correct. We have nobody signed up to testify on this one. Is there any other questions about that? I accept a motion to adopt the dash ones.
So moved.
Okay. President Stigler has moved the dash ones be accepted into the bill. Hearing no objection, so ordered. And I'll accept a motion to move House Bill 2315 as amended to the floor if it do pass.
So moved.
Representative Stigler moves House Bill 2315 dash one to the floor if it do pass. Is there any further discussion? Representative
on employment things, disciplinary work or accusations that would come in, I thought that was always confidential. It's not.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as it relates to this particular area, DPSST, that's not the case. So, for example, if a police officer, I'm looking for support from DPSST here, but if there's a complaint filed against a police officer, as example, the sheriff of Multnomah County, the ongoing investigation was public record.
Okay.
And this is the issue that it's meant to clarify that it's not until the investigation is completed.
Call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnitz?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Representative Stigler, would you carry that for us, please?
Yes, sir.
Good, thank you. Okay. And the next item is carryover from yesterday of a work session on House Bill 2360. Open a work session, Mr. Taylor.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2360 comes to you from at the request of John Woody by Representative Roblin. Provides that only the last four digits of a person's Social Security number need be provided in certain trust-related proceedings.
Okay. Is there any? We don't have any witnesses on that. Is there any discussion about that? As you recall, that was the bill.
Yeah.
That did just what it was described.
I had no other testimony from Mr.
No,
Martinez.
No.
Mr. Martinez.
And it, Mr. Martinez, this was acceptable. You got that straightened out. Okay. Any questions?
No.
Okay.
This was previously.
Okay.
Right.
And, okay, I'll accept a motion to
did you find out what's the right way to sure. Consent?
No, but we'll do it that way. We'll do it the way it was you suggested or somebody suggested.
We will,
what I'll do is I'm going to ask for a motion to send this to the floor with the due pass. If that's accepted and there's no objections, then I will then move to put it on the consent calendar. We'll do it in that order.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we send House Bill 2360 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Wisnett has moved House Bill 2360 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objections? Any discussion? Hearing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Garrett?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shields?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Stigler?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wisnett?
Aye.
Chair Barker?
Aye. Motion carries. Is there any objection to putting it on the consent calendar? Hearing none, so ordered. There is no further business before the committee today. We're adjourned. Have a good weekend.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Quick and